Golf Smarter number 424, published on February 18, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Keep your swing, lower your score with author Mike Pyle.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Mike.
Thank you, Fred. It's a pleasure to be here.
And welcome to the man cave.
I like the man cave. Called.
With a nice little view, you seem distracted, but hopefully I'll be able to keep you focused on me and the conversation. But yeah, it is hard. There's a golf course right here.
You've got your magnolias blooming. We've got some people striping it down. What's that, the 12th fairway out there?
Yeah, 12 and 13. Marin Country Club. Yeah. Talked about it before. Yeah, we'll talk about it again. Anyway, let's talk about your stuff. You have this adorable little book that looks like a score book, right?
Yeah, yardage book. Yeah,
it looks like a yardage book called "Keep Your Swing, Lower Your Score." Now, if that's not a recipe for everybody's got to have this, nothing is. So, what made you do this?
Well, Fred, it was, you know what? It was really enlightened self-interest. I really and truly love the game of golf, and you are bombarded and assaulted with all kinds of tips and tricks and lessons on trying to improve. And I've got to be able to distill this onslaught of information into, you know, 1, 2, 3, or even 4, 5, or 6 very, very simple things that you can do shot to shot, round to round, season to season to improve. And so I thought if I told myself I could write down these simple things that it would help me to improve my game. And so that's what I set out to do. And as I was writing them down, I said, gee, maybe other people could benefit from this as well.
So the genesis of this was something for yourself. You wanted to make this work because you had these ideas of things you needed to remember.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I see. And at what point did you share it with somebody and they went, oh, I want a copy of this. How did that, or you just thought, I'm just going to.
There's two things I love. I love writing and I love the game of golf. And as I was writing I'm hesitant to call them tips, but more these approaches to the game, as I was writing them down and they started to expand, I started to evolve a little bit more about, geez, here's sort of my attitude, not just about playing golf, but about the state of the game and the game of golf in general. And it just sort of evolved and expanded from there. And I went, boy, maybe there's a book here. And so the more I wrote, the more I got into it, the more I realized that, hey, although it is small, it is useful, and there's not a wasted or an extraneous word in it, that I thought, geez, maybe there's actually a book here.
And it's a great read because it's a simple read. And that's what I love when golf books are not too technical. They're not too long. Like, you just get lost in some stuff. I mean, you brought another book here with you that is, we don't want to say the name of the book, but it's huge.
It's very big. It's very big.
And how do you really improve off of something like that? And why would the writer spend that much time doing that? I mean,
Well, that's right. I wrote this book and formatted the book so it would be very useful. It's shaped like a yardage book, so you can keep it in your back pocket. It's short, it's brief, it's to the point, so you can refer to it and get something useful out of it. It's not something to sit down and read by the fire and enjoy the reading as much as it's just very utilitarian and very useful and very simple. So when you're out on the course, you're not thinking about 18 different swing thoughts and single plane, double plane, how you're supposed to have your wrist cupped or bowed or straight at the back of your backswing, because you can't, as a mid-handicapper, you can't control that. But there are some things you can control, and those are the things that I tried to articulate in the book.
Chicago?
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis. Handicapper. We are handicapper. I know there's people in the Midwest right now. Oh, he's one of us. sorry. So was it like a branding thing to like make it so that it's like a something to carry with you? Or how did you decide that people shouldn't be reading this regularly?
Well, I think less about – well, partly branding. Yeah, for Ed, it was a way – I mean, I wrote it out of self-interest to improve my game, and then I realized I thought that it could be a book. And then obviously I'm here to try to, you know, sell it and make some green fees and maybe at one point get invited to Augusta. I mean, let's face it, that's what's driving me right now. But at the same time, I wanted it to be useful, right? And a big fat book filled with a lot of extraneous words is not going to be something that you're going to remember every time you go out. But here's something that you can carry with you, look at, and even make notes on. So really, ultimately, golf can be very, very complex. But you're probably, as a mid-handicapper, you're probably not going to get better and you're not going to have as much fun unless you can really focus into 2, 3, 4, 5 things that you can concentrate on, focus on, and that you can execute, right? I mean, there's lots of golf tips about doing this and doing that, but you don't really know what it means.
It's not a book that you're going to have on your library, you know, because it'll get lost. No one will
That's
ever
right.
see it. But
That's
it,
right.
it's for your bag.
That's
it's
right.
for the bathroom.
Right.
Right? Your back pocket. So I guess my obvious question would be, has it worked for you?
Well, I thought your obvious question would be, where can I buy it? But
That's at the end of the podcast. We're going to have it available in Golf Smarter, in our Golfer's Mart. But I mean, does the content that you have created for yourself work for you?
Yes, absolutely. It worked in two ways. One, it worked in the during the process of writing it, and it works as a reminder. And I carry it with me, and sometimes I have to refer to it, especially if my round is going a little south. But what the book tries to do is identify and articulate those things that you can control. I mean, the title is Keep Your Swing, Lower Your Score. So there's a couple of basic premises behind it. But the first and primary premise is that it gives you ideas and approaches that you can remember, that you can act upon. And one of them is very, very simple, is pick a target, right? And there's all kinds of golf books that say, you know, pick a target and aim for it. But that very, very simple point gets lost among 300 pages of other advice. And so the average golfer gets confused about doing that. And my book says, pick a target. Hey, keep that near. Keep that to your heart. Embrace that. Don't forget it. And it's a simple thing to do without changing your swing, without thinking about it, anything else. I'm going to aim for that patch of grass. I'm going to aim for that pine bow. I'm going to aim for that skyline, that chimney, whatever it might be. And the point is you're not going to hit the chimney or the pine bow or the patch of grass, but what it does do is focus the golfer's mind on a very simple, very straightforward, very actionable thing.
Have you received feedback from other people that it's worked for them?
Yes, I'm just starting to promote it, but I've got a number of golf pros around the country saying that, boy, the information in here is really, really useful for the average golfer.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I've got 20 reviews on Amazon that take two particular approaches to it. One is that it's very funny, it's very short, it's very to the point, it's very easy to read, and the other thing is that, you know what, it's really useful. I don't get I don't get wrapped up in my underwear thinking about where my club face is pointed at the back at the top of my backswing. I always remember to, one of the things I say is just keep your head down, keep your head still, keep your eyes where the ball was. That's something that anyone can do, anyone can understand, and anyone can control.
And now the last episode that we had with Martin Chuck, he went nuts about keeping the head down. It's like, no, you don't do that. So Anyway, so there's a dispute on one of them.
Exactly.
Well, there's going to be disputes on all of them. Right. But what I loved about the book, and I really did enjoy it.
Thank you.
Oh, I really did. Because I kept reading going, that's what we talk about on the show. That's how I feel about it. Yes, that's exactly how I feel about it. I mean, it, to me, it was an affirmation and a confirmation that your thoughts, my thoughts were going in the same direction, so I must like your thoughts. So what is your, give me the history of your relationship with golf and where you got to the point where you can self-teach.
I got it from my father. He was an average golfer, but absolutely loved everything about the game. He had six kids. The other five wanted nothing to do with the game of golf. Who knows why that is? But it was in my DNA, and that's where I started with it. And then
so you've been playing pretty much your whole life.
And I haven't improved more than three strokes until I wrote this book.
No, come on, really?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
So my father turned me on to it. I used to caddy for my grandfather, and he played with hickory shafted clubs. But it's a very addictive game, and I was hooked. And I think there are a couple reasons for that. One is that you can play by yourself, right? You can always have a foursome, and there's a lot of camaraderie involved, but you don't need eight other players like in baseball. You don't need a few others in basketball or football. You can always go out and play by yourself. And the second thing that's very attractive by it is the measurement of it is always there. There is no equivocation about whether you played well or not. You either scored or you didn't. Okay, you may have hit some good shots, you may have hit a lot of bad shots, but at the end of the day, you either shot a 79 or a 99, and it's real clear as to whether you played well or not. So that feedback was very, very useful and attractive to me. And the third thing is, and even more so now, as you know, one gets a little north in their age, that you can continue to play.
We call that being on the back nine.
There you go. That's right.
Of life.
I'm hoping to still be on the front nine, at least mentally. But you can play it until you're on the way back side of the back nine, and continue to enjoy and continue to have fun. And I think maybe the fourth thing is when you're outside and it's really, really beautiful. Every golf course is filled with trees and greens and flowers, and it's just really physically beautiful.
Yep, and it's a great walk.
It's a great
and
walk.
Here in Marin County, which you also live in this county, we've got some walks. We've got some golf courses that are
That's serious walks. That's
up
right.
And down, you know, and then you know, you go to Texas and everything, you can see the entire course from the first tee box.
That's right.
Let's go over the do you mind if we pick this apart and we talk about it in detail?
No, let's do that. Let's
awesome,
do that.
That
would be great for that.
Because, again, it's so much fun, and I agree with so much of it. It's just great to talk about this. So let's just start at the beginning here, because you kind of just talked about that with the scoring. There are metrics to everything. But one of the things about the metrics that you talk about, you good round or bad round. But there are people who shouldn't be caught up with par. There are golfers that par is just too much pressure.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Fred. We were talking a little bit about it earlier. The game, one has to take the approach that the game the pros play, and even any pro, right, from the tour to the web.com to the mini tours. You know, one of the ways to look, and those guys shoot par, those guys and gals shoot par or better. And as an average golfer, you want to shoot par. It's a good goal. But it's like saying, I'm going to go out and play in the NFL. I'm going to go out and play in the NBA. I'm going to go out and play in the NHL. It's just a completely different game. So par, as we point out in the book, is a good thing to shoot for and think about and desire. But at the end of the day, shooting par is not just par. Shooting par is really tough. I mean, that is scratch, and very few people shoot scratch golf, right? So one of the things I articulate in the book is that bogey, shoot for bogey. It's a way acceptable score, and maybe most importantly, if you shoot for bogey and that's your par, the pressure is off. It's just so much easier and so much fun to give yourself, okay, I can hit one bad shot. And then when one shoot bogey, hey, you've made in your mind a par, and you're that much more satisfied, set up, and filled with confidence teeing off at the next hole. And the other thing is, if you get par, great. You've just shot yourself a birdie. But I think the most important thing is if you set the goal for bogey, and then you're up on the following tee box, you're feeling confident, you're feeling composed, and you're not feeling frustrated because you didn't shoot par.
Right. And it'll only make you crazy.
It only makes you crazy.
Makes you crazy. And, you know, if you think about, like, you go out and say you're shooting bogey golf and you play with somebody who's a scratch golfer. What does that mean? They had one less shot per hole than you?
That's right.
Is it really that big of a deal? No. And what if you got a five on every hole? Doesn't that come out to a 90? That's bogey golf, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a good goal for yourself, because, you know, with a par five, there's room for improvement. I mean, like, it's forgiving on a par five because you have that second chance. And par threes aren't necessarily the easiest things because you only get one shot to get it right.
That's right.
You know, and the short game is always difficult no matter who's playing it.
That's right.
So, so play bogey golf and don't hurt yourself.
Play,
I mean, don't make yourself crazy.
Bogey golf is 90, and I think if you care about the game, you're probably not going to be happy with a 90. But all you need from bogey golf is a one par, and that's an 89. And there's a world of difference in the average golfers between a 90 and an 89.
Yeah.
You know, and
there's a lot of people who would love to shoot a 90.
That's right, exactly.
That rarely, if ever, break 100.
Right.
And they don't know what they're doing wrong.
Right.
We all know.
Because there's
wrong.
Possibly so much that they're doing wrong, and you can't begin to correct at all. And that's part of the theme of the book, is there are some things that you can do without buying new clubs, taking lessons, that are very easy and very consistent to be able to apply, and you're going to take strokes off your game.
Absolutely. I love the subtitle of your book, too. We talked about Keep Your Swing Lower Your Score being the main title. Subtitle, Cut Your Handicap Without Changing Your Swing or Taking Lessons.
Or taking lessons.
Oh, my God. It's like, oh, I'm going to read that. You know, I mean, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect.
The pros I've sent it to don't like it so much, but I understand that.
You mean the teaching pros?
Right.
Well, of course not, because they want to just fill your head with all these things that are, and that's the other thing, is that there's so much going on in your head anyway. That's what I love about your approach of just take one thing for this round. Don't try, explain that part for me.
Right.
About how you say, just focus on this round, focus on one thing, right?
Well, that's right, and you know, not to denigrate lessons. I think the important thing about lessons, and all golf pros are going to recognize this, and my hat's off to them. It's a very difficult job, but also a very rewarding job, which is you know, taking the most out of a lesson is really incumbent upon you as the student. You know, you want to tell your pro that, hey, I'm trying to achieve this, and then they should respond to that. And so to answer your question, Fred, I think is another theme to this game is patience. And, you know, you hear that on TV all the time, right? Is you got to know when to attack and know when not to attack. And you can't...
We call that golf smart.
That's right, exactly. That's right, golf smart. That's right. It's managing the course and being patient. And going in, you probably want to have a single thought going through your round and pick a thought. It really doesn't matter what that thought is, but give that thought a chance to grow so that you can harvest it at the end of the round. So, and maybe it's just me, but so many of us are out there and going, okay, here's my swing thought now. Oop, I didn't do well, so I'm going to have a different swing thought. And oop, I went in the water, now I'm going to have a different swing thought.
Yeah, I want an example of how you carry that out through a round of golf. Because things change through that four-hour round.
Well, that's exactly right, and I'm human like anyone else, which is part of the reason that I made the book short and able to fill in your pocket. I need to be reminded. I need checklists. I need things to tangible things to refer to. So if my round's starting to go south, I literally take the book out of my pocket, and it's well-worn, and I thumb through. I go, all right, Mike. Take a break, take a breath, and recover, and be resilient. And so I'll pick a swing thought, and depending on what it might be, but I think the point is pick your swing thought and stay with it through all 18 holes. And I think there are a couple that are really key. Pick a target, keep your head down. Somebody might agree or disagree, but I think it's more important to pick a swing thought that makes some sense, obviously, but stay with it. And one of the things that I do is mine is just to stay down. I have a tendency, like many golfers, to lift my head, which, and I think the rest of the body follows.
Yeah, it's the back.
And you come up and out of it, and you generally either slice it or flare it to the right. So one of the things I continue to tell myself, and it's different for everybody, is to stay down. Take an athletic stance, keep the knees bent, and stay down. But I think more to the point of what I'm trying to communicate is whether it's stay down, keep your head down, pick a target, it's less about what it is and more about pick one and stay with it.
One of my all-time favorite tips about keeping the head down was from Dr. Joe Perrin on the show. Long, long time ago he said it, but I always remembered it, is he said, imagine a cupboard door is open above you. And you know what happens if you lift your head and the door is open, you don't realize you whack the back of your head.
Right.
So just think that cupboard door is right above your head, and that if you lift it, you're going to get wonked. You're going to get bonked in the head.
Right.
I always like that. Tell me what you mean by good scoring versus great shots.
Well, my approach to that is at the end of the it is a competition, either with yourself or with, you know, people in your foursome or with people around the world, because you can now compare scores, right? So if you believe that it is a competition, and rightly or wrongly, you want to win. And I don't think you're going to buy this book unless you want to win, either beat yourself or beat your guys in your foursome. But I look at it this way, as I say in the book, at the end of the round, 19th hole, you're having a soda or a beer, and you pull out the scorecards and you start tallying it up, and we've all done it, and some dollars go across the table, right, and somebody's buying the beer because they lost. But it's at the end of the day, it's generally about who shot the best score, either net or gross. And the conversation might be, boy, you hit a towering drive on 15, or boy, you made that great sand shot, or Fred, that was, God, what a great putt. You had that curling multi-breaker 55-footer on 13. That was so huge.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you close your eyes when you're putting.
That's right, exactly. But at the end of the day, the most important thing, I believe, and I think most golfers believe, and they may not admit, is that, did you shoot a 79? Did you shoot an 89? Did you shoot a 99 or 101? And so good scoring versus great shots. Me personally, and I believe most golfers, although they would admit it, would rather shoot their best score than they would to make, you know, a towering drive of 290, 265, or 310. And if that's what you believe, then this book is probably for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. And then this is something that I went out and just played 9 holes today, but this is something that I should have remembered. Point two on this one is just that every shot counts one. You know, you could still walk away with a bogey or even a double bogey if you have to, but don't quit on the hole.
That's right.
And is that what you mean by every shot counts one?
Well, there's 2 points to that. One is, that's right, don't quit. Be resilient. It's a game of bounce back. But I think in that chapter, what I'm more after is that, you know, the idea of you putt or you drive for dough and putt for show or whatever it is. You drive
for
show and
putt for
dough.
Yeah.
And I just read an article in a golf magazine the other day that said it was just the opposite. So everyone,
what do you mean
is
it was the opposite.
You drive for dough and putt for show. But that supports my point, right? Which is a drive counts one stroke, putt counts one stroke. So it doesn't matter. What matters is getting it in the hole in as few a strokes as possible.
And
so,
where do you pick that up? On the putting green, where either do one or two or three. That's where your score changes, isn't it?
Well, except that you can't get to the green if you've driven it behind a tree off your drive or driven it in the water off your drive. That's still one more stroke, right? So you can't give yourself a shot to get on the green in regulation or plus one unless you've put it in the fairway or at least with an approach to a shot at the green.
Well, I don't know. I think that a lot of times, like if you have that bad drive, that the problem then arises that people think, I can get there. You know, and one of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever received, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
Right. That's right.
So there are ways of keeping the score down without having, you know, all those skills in the world. You just have to be smart about it.
You got to golf smarter. That's right. So if you chunk it in the trees, punch out, take your punishment, and you don't necessarily have to get on the green from there, but give yourself another shot. So you get it close to the green, chip it close, and put it in.
We have so much more to do in this book. We really have just been scratched chapter one. Can you stick around so we can do part two of this for members only?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. So now the main question I should be asking is, where is this available? Where can we pick this book up?
Fred, you're so kind. you can get it on Amazon.
Okay, and we'll have that in our Golfers Mark because we have a book section there, so we'll make sure that it's there.
That's right. And then I also have a website
called... that's the question.
That's right. It's at golfforguys.com. That's golf, F-O-R, forguys.com. And you can purchase it there direct.
Okay. Golf for Guys... And what else is on the website, or is it the book? It's
purely a marketplace for the book.
Okay. All right. Mike Pyle, author of Keep Your Swing, Lower Your Score, thank you so much. Stick around. We got part two coming up, all right?
Thank you, Fred. My pleasure.
So our next conversation with Mike is a members-only episode, and we'll break down more of the book, including course management, metal game, driving range, and a lot more. But I'd like to alert you to stay tuned for a special announcement in the form of a short podcast episode that's coming very soon. For those of you who are not members, we're about to give you the chance to get our most popular members-only episodes from our Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.